The following views and opinions do not necessarily reflect those of Talk 1230 WYTS, its staff, management, or parent company, Clear Channel. Listeners should not use Dr. Kvitko's comments and advice in place of receiving an actual dental exam. Time now for Dentally Speaking on Talk 1230 WYTS with Dr. Brian Kvitko. Call 821-1230. That's 821-1230 to discuss your dental issues. Now here's Dr. Kvitko on Talk 1230 WYTS.
Talk 1230 WYTS. Welcome to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko, also known as everything you've always wanted to know about dentistry but were too numb to ask. Hello, I'm General Dentist Dr. Brian Kvitko. Good morning. We're here live in the studio, and keep in mind we're able to take your phone calls at 821-1230. Today, the question of the day is going to be this. In a national survey, what percent of people responded to the question that said taking of x-rays in the dental office was important? All right, what percent of people said that taking x-rays in the dental office is important? You can call in with your guests. You can send us an email to dentallyspeakingontalk1230@yahoo.com. And we will give out the answer here later on in the show. Today we want to talk about a few things, but the first thing I want to talk about is what's the best way to find a dentist? Just going to throw out some of these questions. The other topic we're going to go into is, what would you think if a hygienist were allowed to open their own office separate from a dental office? What would you think if your hygienist was allowed to do fillings or extractions and other surgeries? What about those amalgam fillings? Are they really unsafe? Should I have them removed? Do they poison me with mercury? And how was this supposed danger discovered in the first place? Also, oral cancer. Is it really a concern? What are the risk factors? How many cases of oral cancer are discovered each year in the United States? How often does someone die of oral cancer? And, okay, and then also, we may get into later, if there's time, what exactly is periodontal disease? How do you get it? Is it hereditary? Does smoking have an impact on whether a person gets periodontal disease? And can it be cured? Those are just a few questions, and of course, if you have your own, feel free to call in. Okay, so let's start with how do you find a dentist? I mean, a dentist and the patient, it's a pretty personal relationship that most people have. It's something that I've been told by many, many patients is the most personal. Women all the time will tell me that they would rather go to their OBGYN than a dentist because they feel more vulnerable. And think about that for a second. If you were to be asked to just stand in a room with other people there, with your mouth open wide, just stand there, don't say anything. Just open your mouth wide. In fact, try it right now. How long can you stand there without feeling like everybody can see your soul? You know, how long can you stand there before you kind of feel silly? You would stand there if you just raised your hand, you'd stand there if you had to cross your fingers or, you know, cross your legs, but standing there with your mouth wide open makes you feel vulnerable. And I think that if you go back to when, if you think about when we're little, you know, infants, toddlers, we explore the world through our mouth. They pick something up, they put it in their mouth. Everything they want to taste, they want to feel it. What does it feel like in my mouth? What does it taste like in my mouth? So I think that helps explain why this is such a personal thing. Now, we're not only talking about finding a dentist for yourself, because you also have to find one that you're comfortable with for your children, or for your mom or your dad, who may be up in years. Now, there was an article in USA Weekend, mid-March, written by Lisa Jaffe Hubble, and it was entitled, Finding a New Dentist, Five Things You Need to Know About. And I think it covers quite a few, and I'm going to add some of my own. But one of the things, well, of course, this is assuming, of course, you don't just come to me. I'm kind of kidding, but anyway. But let's just say you want to go through this process. Now, first, you might consider calling the local chapter of your American Dental Association. In Columbus, that's the Columbus Dental Society. In Ohio, you can also call the ODA, Ohio Dental Association. If you are going to go with the American Dental Association first, they have a website, it's ada.org, and you can find the ADA members nearest you. Once you've done that, you can find the practices that are that have websites, and maybe go to them, and you'll get more information about the dentist and the office that you're considering. Now, if you do have young children, you don't have to, but you can consider going to a pediatric dentist, pediodontist. It's one of those things where they have a little more training in dealing with the psychology of working with children. There are plenty of general dentists, I consider myself one of them, who do really well with children. So it really is up to you. If you want to go to the same dentist as your children, of course, you would want to just choose a general dentist. If you don't mind taking the kids to a separate office altogether, then you could take them to a pediatric dentist or pediodontist. All right, now, you can also talk to current patients. So you can call the dental office that you're thinking about going to and request a patient referral. So, you know, it might take a couple days to arrange, but a good practice will be happy to find someone willing to talk. You know, if they don't, it might be a red flag. So if they say, no, we can't put you in touch with any of our patients, that might be a red flag, and you might want to ask yourself why. And then ask the reference about his or her experiences with the staff. So, you know, ask the that person that they've arranged for you to talk to, how do they interact with the staff? You know, not so much just are they nice and all that, but think about the kinds of things you expect from a staff when you get there. Are you treated kindly, promptly, with respect? Unless you don't care about that. If you're one of the patients who just wants to get in, get out, not a whole lot of, hi, how are you doing? Just clean my teeth and don't talk to me, then, of course, you might be looking for an office that does that. Okay. The other thing, another thing that you can do is to stop by the office. You know I encourage all the time people can stop in for a get acquainted visit. It'd be nice if they would call so we could have specifically set aside time to do this. But on the other hand, if somebody just walks in and says, hey, I'm new in town, I heard about your office, or I drove by, and I just want to check you guys out, see what you're all about, we're more than happy to give somebody a tour. I'll stop what I'm doing if I can and come over and shake their hand, say hello. And if you do that at a couple, three offices, then you'll have a real sense of the differences. I know that oftentimes I will do, emergencies for other, for colleagues who are out of town. And the patients, when they come, are very surprised. I mean, it's, you know, they're not used to seeing as much of the high-tech things that that we have, and it's a world that they didn't even understand existed out there. So, you know, and again, if you're looking for an office just like the one you left, maybe you moved here from Minnesota or Tennessee or something, and you just want status quo, then you're going to want to go to the office and hope to find one that seems to fit that bill. All right, let's see. Now, during your visit, you want to note how busy the office is. Ask how much time the practice allocates for each appointment. You know, some offices spend 20 minutes for a routine visit and cleaning, and others spend about an hour. That's kind of another whole topic, but I can tell you just right now, and I'm sure we'll get to it down the road, either today or in another show, you can't possibly clean somebody's teeth in 20 minutes. So if you're having that, if that's the case for you now, you need to think about finding an office that will spend more time doing that procedure, or simply ask the office you're going to take their time and be thorough. Now, the next thing, number four, would be getting on the same page. So parents need to ensure that the dentist's philosophy with dealing with a scared child, for example, matches their own. Some dentists still use a papoose board to restrain a child, while others give oral and intravenous sedation. So you need to be comfortable with what they do, or find somebody else that is going to do, you know, or find somebody else, basically. So, like, if your dentist uses the papoose board and you're not happy with that being used, then you find a different dentist. Also ask if they specialize in any dental services that you need. Not all dentists, for example, offer dentures or cosmetic procedures, for instance. Now, my office is a little unique in that we offer all of those services, so even though I'm a general dentist, we don't have to send you all over town to have those different procedures. Now, for those of you that don't know, a papoose board is a wooden board that looks a little bit like a small surfboard, I guess, or maybe a big skateboard without the little lips. And it has restraints, and they set the child on the board and strap them down. Their head is strapped down, their arms, their legs, everything is strapped down. The thinking being that this procedure needs to be done, and if the child won't cooperate, we just have to hold them down and do it. Honestly, I don't prescribe to that particular treatment. Never have. I've seen it done, but I don't think it's all that pleasant. And just as an example, there was an article in today's Columbus Dispatch today, and it's about the heading is Memphis guard pointed about his fear of needles. And they're referring to Memphis guard, Memphis basketball team guard Derrick Rose. And he was injured in the game against that they were playing against Michigan State on Friday. And he needed 4 stitches. Well, apparently, his quote, "I'm terrified of needles." He was on the verge of tears, came stalking out of the locker room. There was no way that they were going to get him to sit there for stitches. Now, here's the reason. Here's a quote. Well, let me leading up to the quote, says, he's not exactly sure what brought on his fear, but he vividly remembers when he was 7, he fell off his bicycle, and another child ran over his head with a bike, causing a large wound on the back of his head. Quote, the nurses at the hospital were holding him down, and he was so scared he broke away from them and got up, said his mom, Brenda Rose. Quote, they had to tape him to the gurney to do the stitches. He was mad at everyone that day. So, you know, there you go. There's just one story, but I'm going to say that that same thing could have happened in the dental office. And anyway, just think about that. Find out if that's a procedure that the office you're considering going to would use. Now, I use, what do I do? I use oral sedation, primarily oral, and it works great. We have the kids come in 30 minutes early. We mix up a liquid. It's a good-tasting cough syrup. Really is good tasting, doesn't just say so. And we mix in some oral sedatives, an anti-nausea drug. I crush them up, dissolve them in the liquid. And then the mom gets their child to swallow it. And we'll titrate in some nitrous oxide gas, and things go really well. And I think doing that keeps us from ever having one of our patients grow up to be quoted in the newspaper of how terrible everything was and how terrified they are now of things like stitching or needles. Then, the fifth parameter you might want to consider is, as a new patient, if you feel you are getting a hard sell for a procedure, tell the dentist, hygienist, or front office staff member to give them a second chance, but if you can't become comfortable talking to the dentist about options, risk, benefits, and alternatives to treatment, then find another dentist. So, basically, you know, your dentist should be open to providing you with written estimates for any work that they suggest. They should be willing to explain why they're doing what they're doing. And if that's not happening, then that may not be the office for you. I mean, if you think that what you're getting there is a hard sell, you don't really believe that you need it, and you're not happy with the questions, then that may not be the office for you. All right, now those are the 5 suggestions listed in the article that I referenced. And I have some of my own ideas that I want to throw out there. And we're going to do that after the break. You're listening to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko here on Talk 1230 WYTS. Talk 1230 WYTS. This is Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko. Okay, earlier we threw out a question of the day. The question was, what percent of people responding to a survey said that taking x-rays in the dental office was important to them? We're not going to give the answer out quite yet, but feel free to give us a call with your guess or send us an email. So far we have a guess from Joe. Blackberries are wonderful, aren't they? Joe says 92%. Nathan answered 78%. Marie sent in a guess of 70%. No, those aren't it. I'll give you a hint. It's a little bit lower than that. All right, before the break, we were talking about how to select a dentist, how to find a dental office, especially if you're moving into a new town, just moved to Columbus, for example, or something. Or it can also be if you have, for whatever reason, decided that you're just not jibing with the dental office you're currently visiting. Okay, so, and I said I was going to give you some of my own ideas. And here's what I tell people. People ask me all the time. They've been my patient for a while. They're now moving. They've been transferred for whatever reason. They're now leaving. And they'll say, hey, I'm moving to San Francisco. Do you know any dentists there? Is there anybody that you can, anybody you know that's a good dentist that I could hook up with out there, not have to go through that process of finding one just out of the phone book, which, by the way, is the absolute worst way to find a dentist. So, if you take anything out of this, I would suggest you take the notion that looking in the phone book is not what you want to do. Okay, here's what I tell people to do. Call up. Well, I'm sorry. First of all, I'll say, hey, you know, go out there, look in your phone book or drive around, write down the names of the various dentists that you feel are close enough to your home that you would consider making the trip to, and send them to me. And I'll in turn look them over and first of all see if I happen to know any of them, And if I do, then of course that would be great. And if that person trusts me, then they'll be able to hook up with that dentist and not have to go through the process. And we've done that. And there have been times when I did actually know somebody, and there are times when I didn't. So here's what I told people to do when I didn't. I said, call up several of the local dental labs and ask them, each one, say, hey, I'd like to talk to the owner. Get the owner on the phone and say, I'm new to town. I would like the name. Could you please give me the name of your account? Or maybe you can give me three names, the top three accounts. And what I mean by that is give me the name of the most picky, most finicky, the dentist that provides you with the best quality impressions, the dentist that provides you with the best preparations for their crowns. The one that seems to care the most about quality, the one that will send things back if they're not correct, if it's not just right. And what's going to happen is you're only going to get, you know, keep in mind, dentists only send their work to usually just to one lab. So you won't get duplicate names, but if you call several labs, you'll have several names. So you can either, you know, take three names from each lab, one from each lab if you want the absolute... I'm going to call it the absolute best dentist that they work with. And you're not asking them to say anything bad about any other dentist. You just say, just give me the name of the one you would go to. The one that really, really seems to take the time and care to do it right. Okay, so take those names. And, you know, you can also call out-of-town labs and ask them if they have any clients in your city, because not all dentists refer or rather send their work to a local lab. I used to send work to a local lab. Now I send work to California. So it's a little bit of a crapshoot as to trying to find which lab has your local, your dental office account. Okay, so then, now you're going to have this list of names. Remember, there won't be any duplicates. They'll just all be different. So that could still be confusing. The next thing you should consider doing is, you know, you can ask friends... your new friends that you meet maybe in your neighborhood to give you the name of either their dentist or the dentist that they've heard is maybe the best dentist in town. Now keep in mind that's a lay opinion. They won't really know if it's the best dentist in town, but it's a name. And then when you go to work, and possibly the reason you're out there to begin with in this new town is you were transferred. So you have this new group of people at work, and ask around, ask them, you know, who's your dentist? Who's your dentist? Do you like them? How long have you been going there? What kind of treatment do they do? Are you comfortable with the way you're treated? And to be honest, Don't ask them if they take your insurance, and don't make that an excuse for going to that office. It's probably that would be the another really, really bad idea for selecting a dental office. We're probably going to do a whole show on that coming up, but I can tell you that the fact that they're on the list, your insurance, means nothing other than they're willing to work for a discount. It has nothing to do with quality care. I'm not saying that the quality care isn't sometimes there. I'm just saying that the only when you hear the word preferred provider, that's an insurance company term. The only people that prefer that you go to that dentist or makes that dentist preferred is the insurance company. They haven't had to pass a test or anything to be on that list. So now you have three groups of names. You have the dental lab list. You have the friends maybe in your new neighborhood. And you have a list that was generated by your new coworkers. And so if you take those three lists and look at them, you're going to find that there hopefully are going to be, there's going to be one or two names that show up on a couple of those lists. Well, if there's only one name that shows up on all three of those lists, that's probably your dentist. If there are two or three that, you know, show up on all three lists, now you have three offices to pick from, and you should arrange to visit them and ask for a tour and use those first five examples of recommendations to determine if this is really the office you want to go to. So, when we come back, we're going to talk a little more about this, and we're going to move on to the topic about amalgam restorations. Again, your phone calls are welcome at 821-1230. And you can send us an email to dentallyspeakingontalk1230@yahoo.com. This is Dr. Kvitko, and you're listening to Talk 1230 WYTS. Talk 1230 WYTS. Hi, I'm Dr. Kvitko, a general dentist here in Columbus, Ohio. And we're doing our live call-in show, and today's question of the day is what percent of people surveyed said that taking x-rays was an important part of a dental visit? And over the break, we had a few calls that came in. Devon called in a guess of 60%. Mark called in 69%. And Joan, 65%. You're getting closer. Remember, I said earlier that it's a little bit lower, so we're getting in the range, but still even lower, which I think is a little surprising to me, probably to you folks as well. So, anyway, we were talking about how to select a dentist and all of the things that you might want to consider. And so now what I want to do is move on to something that to me was a little bit disturbing. It's an article that came out in the ADA News, actually. It's the March issue, March 17th of the ADA News. And the heading is that in Minnesota, there's a bill that expands the dental hygiene scope. So you might remember that I posed the question, and that is, what would you think if hygienists were allowed to open their own offices separate from a dental office? Of course, that's a different story than the one I'm about to reference. But and then the question is, what do you think if a hygienist was allowed to do fillings, extractions, and other surgery? Now, you know, I know that sounds far-fetched, because keep in mind, a lot of dental hygiene programs are 2 years, so out of high school, you can be a hygienist in 2 years. Some have a four-year program, but a lot don't. And this has been going on for several years now, where the Hygiene Association has been pushing every year. They're pushing all around the country to expand their allowable duties, but primarily what they've been pushing for is the autonomy of opening up their own office. And I'm not exactly sure why. I don't know if they, you know, for example, a story that comes to mind. I have, back in the 80s, my hygienist was making some comments about, you know, the things that she was allowed to do, and I think probably some of the interest in this is economic, but and I said to her, her name is Rose, and I said, I think this was like 1988, and I said, she'd been with me for about 8 years, and I said, Rose, if you want to be a dentist, why don't you go to dental school? You could go to dental school. Sounds like you're just not happy being a hygienist, so why don't you be a dentist? And she looked at me kind of funny, and she didn't really answer at the time, but about a year after, maybe less, she did resign, and she went to the dental school, went to the university, and found out what courses she was going to have to take to be eligible to apply to dental school. She applied, she got in, and she became a dentist. And I'm actually pretty proud of that, and she now practices in Mansfield. But instead of doing that, the Hygiene Association is pushing to, you know, we want to open our own office, we want to be able to do surgery, we want to do this and do that. And, you know, I would be very concerned about a hygienist being allowed to extract teeth, for example. I would be very concerned about several things. Now, keep in mind that right now they work under our direction, which means, in my office, I'm responsible for everything they do. And that means if the x-ray isn't right, I need to retake it, or I need to make sure that I can teach them how to do a better job the first time. Now, over the years, and I've been a dentist for 28 years, the hygiene scope has been expanded here in Ohio. It's been expanded to allow hygienists to place dental sealants. It's been expanded to allow them to, after a certain amount of training and testing, to be allowed to do local anesthetic. And I think that, and they've been, they, I think that that's great. I mean, to be honest, remember I mentioned earlier there was an economic component of this, and I think that the idea of being able to open up their own office would be their notion would be, well, gee, we'll make more money. But I don't know if people realize this, but hygienists make anywhere between $30 and $35 or $36 an hour here in Columbus, and I've heard that it's even higher in other states. And, you know, if you do the math on that, by the way, you take an hourly rate, you multiply it by 2,080, which represents 40-hour work week times 52 weeks. So if you take $35 an hour, for example, and multiply it by 2,080, you get over $70,000. And, I mean, I don't know, doesn't that seem like enough to most of you? I mean, what do school teachers make, half that? So, I can't quite get why they would like to open up their own offices, but, you know, there are several states that are considering different bills that have been proposed by the dental hygiene folks. I know that one of the things in this article that is mentioned is that it would improve access to care. That they say that it appeals to legislatures with concerns over access to dental care for the poor. Dr. Scott Lingle, chair of the Minnesota Dental Association Legislative Committee and vice chair of the ADA Council on Access, Prevention and Interprofessional Relations, but that, I mean, that's who quoted that. But the problem is there's nothing in the bill that requires that the hygienists serve the underserved populations. So, you know, a lot of times these bills try to get introduced with the idea that we're going to fill this void, serve this need that's not being currently served, and yet they'll wind up in the same metropolitan areas that currently have the higher density of dental offices anyway. In other states, the trying to find where the there are bills in New Jersey being considered. Basically, it's a national effort, and I'm very concerned, and I don't really know. I know that the dental community would be very concerned about this. All right, now, one of the things that seems to be controversial and maybe misunderstood is silver amalgam restorations. People nowadays refer to them as mercury fillings. And there is no such thing as a mercury filling, by the way. It's a silver amalgam. And what I want to do is I want to, so for example, the questions I threw out is, do these fillings really poison me with mercury? And are they unsafe or not? And if, you know, if I have them already, should I have them removed? And how is this, you know, how did we come to fear these restorations in the first place? So what we're going to do, I'm going to save the response to those, the answer to those questions for after the break. And feel free to give us a call at 821-1230 or send us an email at dentallyspeaking on talk1230@yahoo.com. You're listening to Talk 1230 WITS. I'm Dr. Kvitko. We'll be back after the break.
So hear me when I'm saying, smiling.
Talk 1230 WITS. I'm Dr. Kvitko, and you're listening to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko, also known as everything you always wanted to know about dentistry but were too numb to ask. All right, the question of the day today is, what percent of people said that taking dental x-rays is important to them? And no one actually got the right answer, although you were very close. 56% of survey respondents said that taking x-rays was important. Now, interestingly enough, of all of the dental procedures listed in this survey, x-rays ranked at the bottom of the list in importance. That just kind of blows my mind, to be honest. I can't really function without an x-ray. And it's not that... I mean, I guess I understand in a way because maybe there's a cost component, there's the radiation safety, which we addressed in a previous show, but, and you might remember that I mentioned, maybe you weren't listening that week, but, you know, using an old x-ray is like using an old termite report. You wouldn't buy a house with a 2-year-old termite report or a 1-year-old termite report for that matter, and your bank wouldn't let you anyway. And so to ask us to do an exam with old information, old x-rays, is really, you know, kind of silly when you think about it. So, you know, feel free to ask questions of your dentist, of me, if you come to my office, about the x-rays. Why do you need them? Are they important? What are they going to show you? What can you do without them? But then hopefully come in with an open mind that... I guess I understand what he's saying is, how's he going to know what's going on now if I don't let him x-ray me now? So, I want to go to an email that we received. We have an email here from Nathan in Reynoldsburg, and it says, "Dear Dr. Kvitko, I have a severe gag reflex. How can I get through the x-rays easier?" And that's a good question. The reason I went to the email there is the connection about the x-rays. You know, here's the thing. What we do in our office, what I do is I will numb you, Nathan. So if you come to my office, I'll numb you. I'll numb both sides of your tongue. I'll numb both sides of the roof of your mouth. Those are the trigger points of this gag reflex. Now, keep in mind that it is a reflex. You can't control it. I know that. You know, breathing through your nose isn't going to help. Lifting your left leg's not really going to help. Sprinkling salt on your tongue isn't going to help. Sometimes the topical spray does help. But the reality is you need those x-rays, even if they make you gag. And so I feel like it's perfectly fine to go ahead and numb you to allow you to get through the process comfortably and allow us to therefore have good information to treat you. Now, I'm going to get off the subject just a little bit, and I will get back to that question about the silver amalgams. But on this same note, if a person gags easily, dental appointments can be pretty unpleasant. In fact, they tend to stay away from the dental office. If they have a toothache, they tend to go to an oral surgeon who they know is going to knock them out, and they'll have their tooth extracted. And this is all in an effort to avoid that unpleasantness of having this gag reflex kick in while they're trying to be treated. Now, okay, all you gaggers out there, listen up for a second. I know what you're doing. You're having the back teeth extracted. You can still smile. Nobody knows but you and your oral surgeon. Okay, has it ever crossed your mind what's going to happen when you have no teeth and you need a denture? Do you think you're going to be able to wear a denture without gagging? And I'm pausing for a second on purpose because I'm thinking that you haven't even pondered that. So, if you can't wear a denture, because it would make you gag, and I promise you it will. I've seen it. You need to stop going in to the oral surgeon. You need to stop bypassing your general dentist. You need to get to the general dentist, find one that will be able to work with you and your gag reflex. And like I said, in our office, in my office, it's as simple as we will numb you for any procedure that we need to do, including x-rays. Okay, so I obviously I got off on a tangent a little bit there. We are coming close to another break, and not going to have time to deal in depth enough with the question about silver fillings, the ones people refer to as mercury fillings. And so what we're going to do when we come back is I'm just going to give you a few highlights of that, and we may make that an entirely different show, maybe next week or the week after. So you're listening to Dr. Kvitko on Talk 1230 WYTS, Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko. I'm Dr. Kvitko, and you're listening to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko here on Talk 1230 WYTS. All right, so today we're talking about, and I promised to get a little bit, get some information to you on the silver fillings, because we are running out of time rapidly here. Won't be able to go into great detail, but let me just tell you that a study published in the New England Journal of Medicine, where it was scrutinizing mercury, basically states this: there is no connection between mercury and dental amalgams and neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's disease, and no clear evidence supporting the removal of amalgams. All right, now, I know that that's controversial. There are people that are going to, you know, say, well, that's not right. You know, I've heard that they're dangerous and there's mercury in them and all that. The reality is that they're not, and there isn't mercury in them. There was mercury used to make them, but not in them, not available to harm us. Anyway, I mean, I have in my office on my back counter by my desk probably 17 different studies that all conclude that silver amalgams are safe. And this particular study was done by a toxicologist. All right. And so, you know, it wasn't done by a dentist. You have to keep in mind that even essential elements can be toxic when we take them into the body exceeding a certain level. So, for example, this Dr. Mackert writes that you can kill a person by oversaturating the ambient air with oxygen or by forcing large amounts of water into the stomach. So did you realize, therefore, you can die of an overdose of water? Not drowning, but an overdose. Just drink so much in a certain period of time, or in this case, you'd have to have it forced in, you could die. If you have too much oxygen in you, you can die. Room air, by the way, has about 19 to 21% oxygen. So if somebody were given 100% oxygen continuously, they would die of an oxygen overdose. Now, silver amalgam is made by taking silver alloy, and it's a mixture, which is what an amalgamation is, a mixture of different metals that are that stand up to the forces that chewing in the mouth puts on them, and the mercury is used to kind of take these metals and kind of dissolve them temporarily into a little bit of a plastic kind of a clump that we can then push into teeth, and once we've done that and carved away the excess, the mercury vapor basically escapes, and you now have nothing more than a piece of metal in your mouth. You no longer have mercury. You know how when you get new carpet, it stinks, it smells? Well, you're smelling all of those chemicals. But a week or two later, you don't smell it anymore. They're gone. The vapors have gone, have moved on, and now whatever dangerous chemical is in your carpet that you were able to smell pretty strongly at the beginning, they have dissipated, they're gone. No longer do you have to worry about your carpeting harming your health. So, the original study to do this, to determine the, or rather that raised the red flag that silver fillings might be dangerous, was a very, very flawed study. It essentially involves seven sheep, and I'm not going to have time to give it justice today, because it's to me it's a very important topic, and I want to be able to give it the just due that it deserves. So what we'll do is we'll take up that question in another show. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Dr. Brian Kvitko, general dentist here in Columbus, and you've been listening to Dentally Speaking on Talk 1230 WYTS. We're available by podcast, www.talk1230WYTS.